Okay, so let's unpack this. We talk a lot about the black box of algorithms, right?
Right.
Like how we don't know what's happening inside the machine. That's the usual, the scary story we always hear.
All mystery of the code. Yeah.
Exactly. But today, I kind of want to flip that on its head for this deep dive. I want to look at what happens when the machine knows exactly what it's doing and the engineers know exactly what they're doing, and they decide that the best way to help you as well is to lie to you.
That is the crux of it, really. And we aren't talking about a glitch here. We're looking at a classic tension today. Arguably, it's one of the most difficult problems in the entire field of information engineering.
Yeah, the collision between optimization and dignity.
Optimization versus dignity.
Right.
Making a system work efficiently, getting the best outcome versus something deeply human.
Dignity. I mean, that's a heavy word for a tech conversation.
It is heavy. And it's incredibly difficult to encode. You can write code to maximize engagement or clicks, or in this case, dates.
Because those are just metrics.
Exactly. They fit perfectly in a spreadsheet. But you can't exactly write a line of Python that says, if user dignity is less than 50, return respect. It's an abstract human value. It resists being quantified.
Right. And to explore this, we aren't looking at some hypothetical sci-fi scenario. We are going back to 2014 to a stack of documents regarding a very specific experiment run by OkCupid.
2014, a simpler time on the internet.
It really was. I mean, this is pre-Tinder dominance. The norms around digital privacy were, let's just call them fluid.
Very fluid. People were just giving away data.
Yeah, and OkCupid was an absolute giant in the space then. And at the helm was Christian Rutter.
The founder and CEO.
Right. And honestly, to understand the mission of this deep dive, you really have to understand his philosophy.
He was a fascinating guy. He ran this blog called OK Trends.
Which was huge at the time.
It was. And he was surprisingly transparent about the fact that if you were on OkCupid, you weren't just a user, you were a subject.
A test subject. He'd openly discussed this. He essentially said, if you are signed up with us, you are the subject of hundreds of experiments at any given time.
Which, to be fair, is true for almost every platform you use today. Facebook, Google, Amazon, they're all A/B testing you constantly.
Constantly.
But Rutter was unique in that he actually blogged about it. He wanted to show the math behind the love. And that leads us directly to the experiment in question.
Right, because Rutter wanted to test the efficacy of his own matching algorithm.
The core promise of the entire site.
OkCupid was famous for those percentage scores. You'd look at a profile and it would say, you are a 90% match with this person, or you are a 30% match.
Correct. 90% is highly recommendable. You should definitely go on a date. 30% is a total do not bother.
So Rutter wanted to know, is the math actually driving the connection, or is it just the power of suggestion?
Right. If I tell you someone is a good match, does that just make you act like they're a good match?
So he decided to break the reality of the site. He literally engineered a deception. She took pairs of people and he manipulated the scores they saw on their screens.
He messed with the fundamental truth of the interface itself. He created distinct cohorts to isolate that variable of suggestion versus the actual variable of compatibility.
Let's break down these groups because the data here is honestly startling.
It really is.
And just for you listening, when we talk about results here, Rutter was tracking if these people formed a relationship. And they define that as exchanging roughly 4 or 5 messages.
Right. Which doesn't sound like much. It's not marriage, but in the world of online dating, 4 sustained messages back and forth is a very significant signal of interest. It's a successful initial connection.
Okay, let's look at the first group. This is the baseline, the low-low group.
These are people who are actually a 30% match, mathematically incompatible based on all their survey answers. And the site told them the truth. It said, you are a 30% match.
So bad fit, and they know it's a bad fit. What happened?
They formed a relationship 10% of the time.
10%.
Right. This gives us our floor.
Great.
If you are incompatible and you know it, you engage about 10% of the time.
Okay, that makes total sense. Now, here's where it gets really interesting. The second group.
The placebo group.
Yes, the placebo group. These are the people who were actually a 30% match, a mathematically bad fit, but Rutter's experiment told them, hey, good news, you are a 90% match.
So they think they found a great prospect, but mathematically, they shouldn't get along at all.
And the result.
They formed a relationship 17% of the time.
17%. Just pause on that for a second. The baseline was 10%.
Right.
Simply lying to them and saying you are compatible nearly doubled the success rate.
It's a massive jump. The lie did staggering amounts of work here. It suggests that just the suggestion of compatibility is powerful enough to override actual measurable incompatibility.
That is huge.
Yeah.
It basically says we see what we want to see. If an authority tells us we're a match, we make it work.
Exactly. But we have to compare it to the reality to get the full picture. What happened when people were actually a 90% match?
So this is the control high group.
Yes. People who were a 90% match and were told the truth that they were a 90% match. In that scenario, they formed a relationship 20% of the time.
Wait, let me make sure I have this right. 17% for the fake matches and 20% for the real matches.
Precisely. The truth, the actual mathematical compatibility that the whole site is built on, only added a 3% marginal advantage over the lie.
That is kind of depressing for the engineers, isn't it?
Very.
It suggests that the algorithm itself is barely doing the heavy lifting. The little digital badge that says 90% is doing almost as much work as the massive personality test they make you take.
It's a profound insight into human behavior, really. It suggests that the perception of compatibility is nearly as valuable as the reality of it.
Wow.
But there was one more group, and this one is arguably the cruelest part of the experiment. The gaslight group.
Right. These were the people who were actually a 90% match. Soulmates, theoretically. But the system lied and told them, you are a 30% match. Stay away.
And in that group, the relationship rate dropped to 16%.
So let's look at that again. The placebo group, bad matches, told they were good, hit 17%.
Right.
The gaslight group, good matches, told they were bad, hit 16%.
The lie defeated the truth.
That is mind-blowing.
People who were bad for each other but thought they were good performed better than people who were actually good for each other but thought they were bad. The presentation of the data completely overrode the actual interpersonal chemistry.
So from an engineering standpoint, Rutter looks at this data and says, well, the system works.
Exactly. And this is where we have to shift from the raw data to the philosophy of it all. Because Christian Rutter's takeaway was effectively, look, the experiment proves that our algorithm does work. The 20% group, the high group, was the highest overall.
Barely, but yeah.
Right. But it also proves that we can manufacture love through suggestion. If these numbers hold up, the website delivers on its ultimate promise. It helps users find relationships.
It just might have to deceive them to do it more efficiently.
Precisely.
And this brings us to the big so what moment.
Sure.
Because when Rutter published this on his blog, the reaction wasn't just, oh, cool math. It was volatile.
Very volatile. People were angry.
And it really highlights this graduate level conflict between two ways of looking at the world, teleology and deontology.
Right. These are big philosophical words, but the concepts are actually very intuitive once you break them down. And they explain exactly why people got so mad.
Start with teleology.
So it comes from telos, which means the end or the goal. This is the utilitarian view of ethics. It focuses entirely on the outcome.
The results.
Exactly. If you are a teleological thinker, the only question you ask is, did the system work?
So in the OkCupid case, the telos, the goal, is finding love, connecting people.
Right. If the goal is to create couples, and the placebo lie creates more couples than the truth would have, then the lie is fundamentally good. It optimized the result.
The ends justify the means.
Completely. The teleological thinker looks at this and says, who cares about the lie? You got a date out of it. You found a relationship. The system served its purpose.
Okay, I get that. Breaking eggs to make an omelet. It's very results driven. Now, what's the other side? Deontology.
Yes, the deontological view. This comes from deon, meaning duty. This framework focuses on rules, rights, and the process itself, regardless of what the final outcome is.
So this is about the rules of the game, not the final score on the board.
Precisely. The deontological argument is that lying to a user is inherently wrong, regardless of whether they ended up getting married because of it. It argues that every human being has a fundamental right to autonomy and truth.
Because without truth, you don't have autonomy.
Exactly. By lying to them, the system treated them as a means to an end. It treated them as a data point rather than an end in themselves.
We can see this split perfectly in the user comments from Rutter's blog post. I want to read one of the angry ones first to illustrate this. This is from a user named APB101.
A classic deontological reaction.
Very much so. They wrote, good to know that anytime I'm here forward, I can trust or distrust your matches, not knowing if your lab experiment is resurfaced. I feel gross. I feel manipulated.
I feel gross. That right there is the phenomenological experience of indignity.
Phenomenological meaning the direct felt experience of it.
Exactly. It's not some abstract ethical theory for APB 101. It's a visceral, physical feeling. They actually went on to say they felt treated literally like lab rats, like animals.
That phrase lab rat is so key here.
It is the absolute definition of the problem we are talking about. When engineers and ethicists try to define dignity in the context of AI and algorithms, it's really hard. It's hard to point to a line of code and say, there, that's dignity.
Because it's invisible until it's gone.
Right. We can really only define it by negation. We know exactly what it feels like when it is taken away. Dignity is the absence of feeling like a lab rat.
It's the feeling of agency. APB 101 is basically saying, I am a human being looking for love, which is a vulnerable thing, and you turn me into a variable just to test your code.
It's a massive violation of informed consent. In the deontological view, you have a strict duty to treat people with respect, which inherently includes telling them the truth about the reality they are navigating.
You can't make a real choice if the world you're looking at is fake.
Exactly. When OkCupid distorted that reality, telling a 30% match they were a 90% match, they systematically stripped the users of their ability to make an informed choice.
Even if it worked out.
Even if that specific user found a spouse through the lie, the indignity remains because their autonomy was completely bypassed. They were manipulated into happiness.
But then you have the other side of the coin. Let's look at another user comment from someone going by Anon. They had a much more pragmatic take on the whole thing.
The teleological counter-argument.
Right. They basically argued, look, if these experiments help the site do better, and if it helps create better matches in the long run for everyone, then the manipulation's okay.
This is the classic black box justification. User Anon is a pure teleological thinker here. They are saying that the internal mechanism, the deception, the hidden experimentation is entirely justified by the output.
If the machine learns to be better at finding love, then tricking a few people for a week is fine.
It's seen as a necessary cost. It's the optimization mindset. And let's be honest, this is the dominant mindset in Silicon Valley.
100%. It's how the entire industry is built.
Engineers are trained to optimize systems. That's their job. They view the user population in aggregate. They don't see individuals with unique feelings. They see a million nodes in a massive network.
And if manipulating 5% of the nodes improves the network's overall efficiency by 10%, the math says, do it.
The math demands you do it.
But that creates this really weird paradox. OkCupid was actually praised by some people in the tech press for being transparent because they told everyone about the experiment afterward.
Ah, yes. The transparency paradox.
Rutter published the results. He showed the graphs. He was completely honest about the dishonesty.
But being honest after the fact doesn't retroactively restore the agency of the people who were tricked in the moment.
Right. It's like a magician telling you how the trick worked after he's already stolen your watch. I mean, you might appreciate the skill of the trick, but you still feel violated because he took your stuff.
And it raises a really difficult question. Does transparency actually fix the indignity, or does it just highlight it?
For APB 101, it definitely highlighted it.
Exactly. They didn't feel better because Rutter blogged about the math. They felt much worse because the blog post publicly confirmed their deepest suspicion. I am just a variable to you.
I want to go back to that 17% number for a second, the placebo group, because there's a deeply human element there that's fascinating to me. These are people who, on paper, shouldn't have liked each other at all.
Fundamentally incompatible.
But they were told by an authority that they were a match, and they made it work. 17% of the time, they built a connection.
It suggests that human connection is incredibly malleable. We are desperately looking for reasons to connect with each other.
We want it to work.
We do. When an authority, and in this modern era, the algorithm is the ultimate authority when it says, this is your person, we suspend our disbelief, we overlook the obvious flaws, we actively project compatibility where there might be absolutely none.
Which is kind of beautiful in a weird way. It shows we're optimistic, we're open to finding love, but it also shows just how vulnerable we are to this kind of technological paternalism.
Technological paternalism, that is a fantastic term for it.
It's like the algorithm acts like a parent.
All right.
Deciding what's best for the children, withholding the complex truth for their own good.
And that is exactly where the dignity issue really festers. Because an adult fundamentally wants to know the truth, even if it hurts. A child is protected from the truth.
Wow, yes.
By lying to the users to get a better outcome, OkCupid essentially infantilized them.
So we have a system that works, it connects people, it might even create love where there literally wasn't any before, just through the power of suggestion, But the cost of that optimization is this subtle, pervasive erosion of our status as adults.
As autonomous agents.
We become users in the most passive, literal sense of the word. We are just being used by the system to generate a result.
And you have to remember, this isn't just about dating. That's just the case study. Think about a news feed on social media.
Oh, absolutely.
If an algorithm shows you a news story, not because it's objectively important, but because it predicts you'll click on it to get an outraged dopamine hit, it's doing the exact same thing.
It's bypassing your rational choice.
It is bypassing your autonomy to optimize for an engagement metric. It's treating you like a lab rat pressing a lever for a pellet.
The OkCupid experiment is just a really clear, quantifiable example of something that's happening everywhere, all the time now.
Correct. It's just incredibly rare to have the CEO of a tech company come out and explicitly say, here's exactly how much we manipulated you, and here is the graph proving how well it worked. Usually, all of this happens behind heavily guarded closed doors.
So what does this all mean for us? For you, the listener, tuning into this deep dive, we want these tools to work. I want my dating app to find me a match. I want my search engine to find the exact right answer instantly. I want the optimization.
We all do. The convenience is incredible. But we also want the dignity. We want the truth.
And the uncomfortable lesson from the OkCupid data is that those two things might be completely zero-sum.
They often are. To get maximum optimization, the absolute highest statistical likelihood of success, the system might inherently need to treat you like an object to be steered.
To preserve your dignity, your autonomy, and your right to the unvarnished truth, the system might have to accept suboptimal results.
It's a brutal trade-off. You really can't have it both ways. If you demand total transparency and total control over your data, you break the magic of the suggestion.
You lose that 17% placebo bump.
Exactly. You lose the bump. You are left with the cold, hard, highly efficient math, which, as we saw in the baseline group, only got a 10% success rate.
The truth was mathematically less effective than the lie. That's the haunting part of all this.
It is the haunting part. The lie worked. The deception created more human connection than the truth did.
This really forces us to confront what we actually value more in our digital lives. Is it the outcome? Or is it the process?
And it leads us to a very difficult, profound question, one that I think every listener needs to sit with and really consider. Because as AI gets better and more integrated into our lives, this isn't going to just be about dating app scores anymore.
No, it's going to be about job offers.
Loan approvals, medical diagnoses, educational tracking, everything.
So let's leave them with that choice.
Here is the question you need to ask yourself. Imagine an algorithm could mathematically guarantee you social happiness. It finds you the perfect spouse, the perfect job, the perfect community. It completely fixes your loneliness.
The ultimate optimization.
Right. But the cost is that it has to lie to you about how it found them. It has to deeply manipulate your perception, filter your reality, and you would never, ever know the truth. You would just be perfectly happy.
Versus
choosing the dignity of the truth. You get to see all the raw data. You get full, uncompromised autonomy, no manipulation whatsoever. But you risk being alone. You risk the suboptimal outcome because you don't have the benevolent machine smoothing the path for you.
The red pill or the blue pill, essentially. Happiness based on a benevolent engineered lie or the jagged edge of a lonely truth.
Would you accept the happiness or would you insist on your dignity?
That is a tough one. And on that note, we're going to let you mull that over. Thanks for diving in with us.
Keep thinking.